Most of us go into prenatal care not really knowing what to expect. At your first visit, they tell you they're going to do slew labs, you know, they're going to do this test, you're going to do that test, and you just kind of go along with it because you think, yeah, no big deal, right? Or maybe it's another test later in pregnancy and you think there's no harm in checking. But what happens if those tests that you consented to without really giving it much thought bring a result that knocks you out of your birth plan needlessly? What if the results don't really mean much of anything in reality, but they put a label on you that makes you high risk in the eyes of the system? It happens quite frequently, and it's something we need to talk about so that you can make an informed decision about your care. Let's go. Are you a Christian woman yearning for a beautiful, joyful pregnancy and birth with a focus on God, not medical tests? Are you worried the birth you want isn't possible and you're tired of being treated like an accident waiting to happen? Hey mama, I'm Lori, host of Your Birth, God's Way. I'm a certified nurse midwife now, but I wasn't always. After working for nearly 20 years in the broken maternity system, I too was in your shoes wondering how I could have the birth I wanted and that I felt God meant for me to have. I found a secret that has actually been known since the beginning of time. God's way is the best way. Spoiler alert, God made us and our babies, and He knows us best. He designed us perfectly for pregnancy, birth, and nourishing our babies after birth, if we work with His design and not against it. In this podcast, you'll learn how to be healthy and have joy during this time of life that will be over before you know it. So if you're ready to reclaim your birth and your babies for His glory, go turn on a few episodes of Bluey for that little one on your hip so you can put the focus back on you for a few minutes with me. Review time this week is a little short, but I love all reviews, short, long, or in between. Doesn't matter. I just love to hear back from you guys. And this week we have a review from back in March from Becca Maisie. The title of it says Godly Wisdom. It says, thank you so much for sharing this godly wisdom about birth. I'm in doula school and this is really encouraging. Love Exodus 1 as well. And of course, all midwives who are Christians love Exodus 1. It's a great one to go read. So if you haven't read that, go read it today. It's very encouraging because it gives us an example of midwives who push back against a system that is set to work against moms and babies. So thank you, Becca Maisie, for that sweet review. If you haven't left me a review yet, please hit pause. It takes like 30 seconds. Go over to Apple Podcasts. If you don't have an Apple phone or Apple computer, Apple something or other, grab your friends, grab your moms, grab your sisters. Just because for some reason, Apple Podcast reviews help more. They help me reach people more. More people see them. And some of the other podcast apps, the reviews, if they're even there, they're kind of hard to find. So that's one that it's easy to find. People are used to looking for them. And so if you can leave a review there, it really, really does help. So go do that for me. And I will see you right back here in a second. Okay, you're back. Let's get started. So I want to preface this by saying that I cannot feasibly go through every single test, okay? There are so many tests offered now in pregnancy, and I don't really know that that's a good thing. You'll see why as we get through this podcast, but there are just really too many for me to go through individually. The Your Birth, God's Way online childbirth education course, Christian childbirth education course, that is, goes over a lot more of the tests in detail, helps you to know the pros and cons to make a really good decision about what tests you want to consent to and which ones you want to decide that you're not going to have. You also have an opportunity to attend live question and answer sessions. So if maybe some new test has come along or there's something about a test that you don't fully understand, you'll have the opportunity to ask me live in those settings. So as we go through this episode, if you're like, man, that's just too much, I don't know what to do, that course is going to be your answer. It's going to really help you to sort through all this and figure it all out. It's easy to think, though, that a lot of these situations are theoretical. It's easy to think that, oh, these things don't happen. You know, it's good to know what the tests are going to tell me. It's good to know if maybe I'm one of the people that has something that maybe I didn't know I had. Maybe I don't have the symptoms yet. And maybe this test is going to help me figure it out to make my pregnancy supposedly safer. It's easy to think that the testing is no big deal. It's easy to think, of course I want to know if I have this or that. If I have no symptoms or anything, of course it's good for me to know that because it's better to know early, right? Our medical system has us in this mentality of, you know, screening for everything and going for this screening at this age and that screening at that age. It's really just a mentality throughout our culture that you want to screen for everything. But pregnancy is different. Pregnancy is a normal process. And you have to understand that this medicalized system, this medicalized model of maternity care does not like your birth plan. Do you hear me? They don't like what you want to do. They don't really want to participate in it. They'll try to tolerate you if they can't find a way around it, but they will find any kind of way to get you to fall in line. And you have to understand and believe that. And you have to start seeing this whole thing through that lens. They love having a reason, a medical reason, to get you back in line with their way of doing things. And if that comes from a finding on a screening test, so be it. They don't really care how you get there. They just want you back in line because that's the easier way for them to do their job. That's really the underlying theme through this whole episode. So let's go through some specific examples. And some of these are personal examples. These are things that I fell into personally that I want you to learn from my experiences. And my experiences are not unique. They are common. So one of the first tests that we're going to talk about today is syphilis testing. Probably not what you were expecting, right? Syphilis? Really? Is that even a thing anymore? Yeah, it is. And I have a real life story to share with you about this that comes from my personal experience. So when you first find out you're pregnant and you consent to all the prenatal exams, one of the things they're testing you for, whether you realize it or not, is a slew of STDs. Even if you're not in a high-risk category for STDs, you're going to get tested for them. One of those looks for syphilis. It is a test that is just kind of a positive or negative on the front end. It's a screening that can actually show other things as well. And then you take it to a deeper level if it comes back positive. Okay? So let's talk about that syphilis test first. And what's so interesting about this is the stuff that I'm about to share with you, I learned last year. Okay? You'll remember that I've been a midwife or in the medical system for almost 20 years. Okay? Or actually over 20 years. I've been a midwife for about 10. I have a son that is 10, and this happened in his pregnancy. So despite my education, despite all of my experience in the medical world, I never knew this. Okay? So don't be surprised when this happens to you because most people don't know this. I learned this at the Twins Breach Conference of all things. It wasn't even about twins and breach, but he was giving us a way that statistics, he was explaining to us a way, Dr. Hayes was, of how statistics can be manipulated, how testing can be put on you even when it's a bad test. And he used this just as an example. And I'm sitting there in the audience going, you've got to be kidding me. This was me. This was me. Let me tell you why. So as I said before, syphilis is one of the STDs it is routinely screened for when you find out you're pregnant and you get those first tests done. Here's the reason that alone is not the best policy. 83% of the positive syphilis cases are in men. Okay? So that means that only 17% of cases are among women, and all of those cases aren't among women of childbearing age. So it's already a very low incidence situation. Okay? That's important because it's going to play into why this is a bad test. The syphilis screening test catches 100% of true positives. That's great, right? That means it has what's called a high sensitivity. It's good at finding out the people that do have it. Great, except for this. It has a very low specificity. That word means that it's very bad at ruling out people who don't have it. So what does that mean? That means this test yields 1,998 false positives for every 2 actual positives. Do you hear that? Out of every 2,000 positive cases, only 2 of those actually have it. 1,998 of those 2,000 don't have it and are going to be subjected to stress and mental anguish for no reason. See, what happens is when that first test comes back, it's called an RPR, when that test comes back positive, you're then led into further testing. If you have that positive screening, you're going to have a follow-up test. And if that follow-up test comes back positive, you still only have a 1 in 100 chance that you actually have it. My story. I got my initial prenatal labs done by my VA physician because it was my first pregnancy. I was able to be seen by the VA. I knew I was planning a home birth, but I figured, hey, this is a way to get my labs done without having to pay out of pocket. No big deal, right? So I go get them. I don't think anything about it. The doctor calls me scared to death. Instantly, I'm like, oh no, what's wrong? And she tells me that this test has come back positive. Well, I don't know much about it, even though, like I said, I've been in maternity care forever, and I'm in midwifery school at that time, but I didn't know what any of that meant. So I start to go do some research, and of course, I'm terrified because I made the mistake of consulting Dr. Google. What I found out is they had already sent my information to the health department because by law, they have to, because I have an STD and those things get reported automatically. So now that led to me being stalked by the health department trying to get me in to get treated for this STD that I supposedly had. Have you been looking for a course online to help you prepare for your natural birth, but you're sick of having to weed through the content to take out all that new agey stuff or the flat out ungodly advice? Well, I've got some great news for you. There is now a course that will teach you everything you need to know to be fully prepared for birth, postpartum, and breastfeeding from a Christian perspective on demand, taught by a midwife with over 20 years of experience in the maternity world. And that midwife is me. After many years of being indoctrinated into that godless, medicalized maternity world, I woke up to the truth and realized that most of the maternity system in our country is based on lies. I became a doula and then a midwife, and now I help moms like you have a God-led, God-filled birth from an informed position so that you do not have to be led by fear, but rather by faith in God and knowledge of the truth. Inside this course, you will be engulfed in scripture while learning about God's ways of nutrition, prenatal care, birth, postpartum care, breastfeeding, what dad needs to know, and so much more. In addition to the course content itself, which is available in both video and audio formats, you'll get workbooks for each module so you can take notes on what you want to remember, Christian relaxation audio tracks to use during pregnancy and labor, printable affirmation cards, and the best part, you'll get access to a live question and answer session with me each month to ask your questions. To sign up or learn more, head over to go.yourbirthgodsway.com/course. That's go.yourbirthgodsway.com/course. Now, this is a serious course, and it's only for serious mamas who truly want to have their birth God's way. So if that's you, head over to go.yourbirthgodsway.com/course today, and I'll see you in the course. Okay, so you can imagine someone that's never even been to the health department, someone who's, you know, leads a normal Christian life, all of a sudden is being treated like I am a person with STDs from who knows where. Well, you can imagine the kind of conversations that this led to between me and my husband and the strife it put between us, because did you give me syphilis? Why do I have syphilis? I didn't know I had syphilis. How did this happen? Right? And I came to find out that a lot of times people can have their first syphilis outbreak and not know it. So maybe I had it and missed it. What's really going on? How long have I had this? Is my child already affected, who is in my tummy right now? Led to all kinds of worry, all kinds of research, all kinds of stress and worry. And in the meantime, I'm wondering, am I even going to get to have my baby at home? Have I already caused my baby to be so messed up then I'm not going to be able to have a baby at home. If you start to research what getting primary syphilis, meaning the first time you've ever got syphilis while you're pregnant, like what that means to a baby, it's scary stuff. It's scary. So what's even more fun about all this is when you find out you have syphilis, you get to go get what's called benzathine penicillin G shots. And those things are like 2 milliliters, if I remember correctly, of thick, painful antibiotics into your butt cheeks, into your glutes. It hurts. It's awful. And guess what else? My sweet husband got to do it as well. So not only are we already stressed wondering what this is about, where did it come from, but now we're both having to go get massive amounts of antibiotics put in our bodies. And by the way, we got to do that for 3 consecutive weeks. So we got to go sit in the waiting room of the health department with everybody under the sun that you can imagine might be there. And guess what? I never had it. I never had any of that. It was all a false positive. This all led to me having to go to a maternal fetal medicine doctor to get cleared to have my home birth because all of the what ifs. What if this happened to the baby? What if that happened to the baby? Which subjected him to more scans that I never wanted him to have. All of that played into the eventuality that my midwife saw me as a time bomb. A ticking time bomb. And I ended up without a provider at 41 weeks and had to drive 5 hours to my midwife friend's house, 2 states over, to have my baby and have the birth plan that I wanted. Are you hearing what I'm telling you? This is from somebody on the inside. This is someone who understands the system on some level, enough that I knew I didn't want to have my baby in a hospital. And yet, by just going along and not really thinking it through, look at what it caused me and my family. Look at the stress we went through, all for nothing. I was one of those 1,998 people who had a false positive out of that 2,000 that the test will show up positive. I was one of those. And you could be too. All for just sticking your arm out and letting them draw blood when you think it's no big deal. Okay? Now, I'm not going to go into in this podcast telling you what you need to decide to do. That's up to you. But I need you to understand the danger that these routine tests can bring to your pregnancy and to your birth plan for no reason. Next test I want to talk about is the gestational diabetes test, which everyone dreads. Once you've heard of it, once you've heard what it means, once you've heard what it all involves, you're like, I don't want to do that. And yet you're pressured into doing it. But here's something interesting. There is a book that is called A Guide to Effective Care in Pregnancy and Childbirth. It was published 25 years ago. And I believe there was an earlier version of that. The gestational diabetes screening is listed in this book as an obstetric practice that should not be done. And the term gestational diabetes is even listed in quotation marks. Why? Well, according to Dr. Marsden Wagner, it's his book that I pulled this information from, he says, quote, "The authors put gestational diabetes in quotation marks because there is no such thing as gestational diabetes." You're not going to hear that much of anywhere else. But in that book, that was the first place I saw it when I read it 15 some odd years ago. And I thought, wait, what? He says, there is no such thing as gestational diabetes. It is an invention of obstetricians that describe an elevated glucose level in the blood, a level that is normal in pregnancy and without serious complications. And that comes from his book called Born in the USA, How a Broken Maternity System Must Be Fixed to Put Women and Children First. And there's a link to that down in the show notes. So how do we test for this, quote, gestational diabetes? What do we do for that? Well, you've probably heard. You get to drink a sugary, syrupy drink that is full of dyes and preservatives or chemicals on an empty stomach and see how your baby deals with it. See, all through pregnancy, we tell you that you really shouldn't be eating that much sugar. You should try to stay away from these things. But for this test, just kidding, don't eat all day. And then I want you to drink this super sugary drink on the way here. And then we're going to draw your blood and see how you handle it. And it causes nausea, a lot of vomiting, makes moms feel terrible because it's a whole lot of simple sugars put into your system, which if you've been taking good care of yourself, you're not used to those simple sugars anymore. And then we wonder why you can't handle it. You've got no protein in there to help you balance it, which is a natural way for your body to deal with the sugar. Nope, we just throw all of this sugar into your body with no help from anything else. Let's read some of the chemicals that are in these oral glucose tolerance beverages, as they call them, beverages. Sounds so nice, right? No. It has dextrose from corn syrup. It has, quote, natural flavoring, which can mean anything. It has food starch modified. It has brominated soybean oil, FD&C yellow number 6, sodium hexametaphosphate, BHA, and sodium benzoate, among other things. Sounds tasty, huh? Sounds great. Sounds like something you'd love to have on your plate in the evening, right? No, it doesn't. It sounds like something that any provider worth their salt is going to tell you to stay away from, and yet most providers are handing it to you and instructing you that you must drink this. So let's say you drink this drink, you get your blood tested an hour later, and your blood sugar is high. Well, guess what? Then you get to do it again, only a more sugary drink, and you get to have your blood drawn 3 times over 3 hours. Great, right? Sign me up or not. There is nothing good about this test. It makes people sick, and guess what else it does? Once you have that label of gestational diabetes, you get put in that high-risk category because the whole medical system is now terrified that you're going to have the dreaded big baby, because that's really the only thing that anyone has associated with this gestational diabetes during pregnancy. That's really the only, quote, risk that they see from it, is that you're going to have a big, huge baby and your baby's going to get stuck. See, they don't even look at all the other things that are actually making these babies get stuck that I don't have time to go into in this podcast. They just say, oh, you got high blood sugar. You're going to have high blood sugar. Your baby's going to be huge. You can't have a home birth. It's not safe. So what's the first line treatment if you do get diagnosed with this so-called gestational diabetes? Well, they're not going to go straight to putting you on medication, believe it or not. What they're going to do is to work on some diet changes. So my question is, if they're going to try to improve your diet at that point, why don't we just do that to start with? Why don't we just make some changes early in our pregnancy and all throughout our pregnancy in our diet so that we can make sure that we don't have those blood sugar spikes in our normal day-to-day readings? Let's look at having high protein in our diet, high good quality protein. Let's make sure that every carb we're eating has a protein to go along with it, because see, that's the way that your body can stabilize its own blood sugar, because you have protein that breaks down slower and the carbs that break down faster for energy, but those two things when combined stabilize your blood sugar. Why don't we just do that and avoid excess sugar? Let's avoid these nasty drinks. There are alternatives as well. There's different drinks that some places will offer that don't have all the preservatives. But I would caution you that it still leads you down the same path. So what if your blood sugar spikes? It's not designed to handle that much sugar at once. And it's also normal for your blood sugar to be a little bit higher during pregnancy. That's part of sustaining the pregnancy and part of getting the baby what it needs. So rather than just choosing an alternative form of the same endpoint, let's do a better way. Some providers will be appeased if you will just do maybe a week's worth of blood sugar checks, maybe once or twice a day at normal times, maybe after you've had a normal meal. Because what matters for your body is not that you're able to handle a bottle that has 50 grams of artificial sugar in it. When I say artificial, I mean the bad kind of sugar. It's not a high quality sugar. It's the worst of the worst. It's corn syrup. So what difference does it make if your body can handle 50 grams of that type of sugar when you never eat that kind of sugar? If you are healthy and you're eating a nutritional, balanced, whole food diet, you're never going to have that in your system. But what you are going to have is your normal diet. So checking your blood sugar after a big meal is a better test of knowing how your body's actually handling it, if you even want to consent to a test. I would caution you against consenting to anything, but that's your choice. You have to look at both sides and you have to decide for yourself what works best for me. What's the best thing for me and my family, and then make that decision. Okay, we've spent enough time on that one. Got to move on. This is one that we go into in detail in the course. So if you need more, if you want to learn more, hop in there. You're going to learn a lot. Next one, GBS in a urinalysis. So GBS stands for group beta strep. It is a normal bacteria that normally lives in your intestinal tract, okay? Now we know your intestinal tract ends in your rectum, which hangs out real close to your vagina, which means that that bacteria can migrate. It almost never means anything for mom. It's almost never a problem. That's why you usually don't even know it's there. About 10 to 30% of women can be colonized with it, meaning that that bacteria hangs out in your vagina. It doesn't cause you any problems. It's no big deal, but it's there. But the problem is that out of that 10 to 30% of women, 1 to 2% of their newborns will develop early onset GBS if they're born through that canal untreated. Of those 1 to 2%, so we're talking 1 to 2% of 10 to 30% of women, and I'm going to break this down for you in a second, but lots of numbers, just need you to understand that these numbers are getting smaller and smaller. So 2 to 3% of those babies who are born at term will die. And that sounds awful, and I totally understand that, but we're going to work through this. What that breaks down to is somewhere between 2 and 6 babies per 10,000 born will die from GBS. But see, there's some things inside of that number that don't tell the whole truth. About a quarter of the cases come from preterm babies, meaning they're born before 37 weeks. So really, that 1 to 2% of newborns that even get GBS at all, a quarter of those are actually preterm babies. So we've got an even lower incidence now for normal babies born at term. This makes that statistic much, much smaller. In women without risk factors, meaning baby's not preterm, mom has not been ruptured for more than 12 hours, meaning her water hasn't been broken for more than 12 hours, and she has no fever, the incidence of a baby having GBS is 1 to 2 per 10,000, 0.5%, less than 1%. Screening and treatment does not reduce late onset GBS. So we've got early onset, that means it happens within the first several days of life. Late onset is greater than a week. So none of the screening and none of the treatment even prevents any of the ones that might get it after a week. Beyond that, there is no study for how things contribute to this. Things like stripping membranes, vaginal exams, internal monitoring, which all increase the likelihood of infection. Those things were not considered, so we don't know if that 0.5% of term babies would have gotten this if every provider and nurse and everybody would have kept their hands out of that mama's vagina and quit tracking bacteria up to a place it has no business being, and it wouldn't have gone if they'd kept their hands out. See, we don't have any studies that control for that. So we don't really know if it's just that the baby just gets it, or is this something that was given to it by the practices of the medical system? We don't know. GBS is transient. That means it tends to come and go. Your body tends to take care of it and it tends to just go away. And it's not a problem for mom, but to that very small percentage of babies, it can be a problem. So how does the medical system deal with it? Well, usually you get swabbed between 35 and 37 weeks. It's like a Q-tip type of thing. You swab from your vagina down to your rectum. That is sent off to the lab where they culture it to see if anything grows. If it comes back with GBS in it, you are called GBS positive. And what that means is during your labor, they will dose you, treat you with antibiotics about every 4 hours in an IV in your arm. That's standard practice. So let's wrap back to the beginning of this section when I said GBS in urinalysis, because we're not talking about, while GBS swabbing at term is a routine test that we could discuss whether it is needed or not, that's actually not the point of this particular section. This section is talking about when they find GBS in your urinalysis. Because see, when you go to see your doctor or some midwives who are inside of that medical system, every time you go, they're going to take a urine sample and they're going to run a urinalysis on you. And if at any point in your pregnancy they find GBS in your urine, you are considered highly colonized and you are instantly called GBS positive and you will instantly be treated during labor. No matter if it clears before the end of pregnancy, because see, the recommendation from all of the organizations is once the GBS is there, don't retest, treat them like they are, because see, the system sees antibiotics as harmless. And if antibiotics were harmless, it wouldn't be any big deal. But the problem is antibiotics are not harmless. And if you're listening to this podcast, I'm pretty sure that you already know that. Antibiotics can cause things like yeast. That's in fact one of the bigger things that they cause in the immediate term right after taking them for both moms and babies. It can cause a yeast infection. And having yeast in the baby's mouth, where it tends to end up, it's called thrush, can wreak havoc on your breastfeeding relationship. It can create pain for mom because she then gets yeast in her breasts and in her milk ducts. It is a big, big hurdle to overcome. Not to mention the antibiotic resistant strains of GBS that are now developing from over treatment. And guess what? Even with treatment, risk is not eliminated. And even with treatment, let's say you had GBS in your urine early in pregnancy, your doctor talks you into treating it, it goes away. They don't even retest you to see if maybe you might be GBS negative by labor time, to where you don't need the antibiotics anymore. They just give it to you. Beyond that, you might have a problem getting to have a home birth if you have a midwife who is not able to give you antibiotics. Some aren't, depending on the state and licensure and what's allowed and what's not. They may not be permitted to give you antibiotics at home. So that might just kind of, by default, end you back up in the medical system. You have to be aware that these routine tests have consequences. And even though you may not be sick and you may not have anything going on and you may feel perfectly normal, you go in for a normal prenatal appointment and your whole plan can be derailed. Last one we're going to talk about today is ultrasounds, especially third trimester ultrasounds. This is another one that happened to me personally that caused me to fall into that world of extra testing. This was not with a third trimester ultrasound. This was with just a normal anatomy scan, and it happened anyway. Because see, when I went in for my normal anatomy scan for my second baby, which I only consented to because I wanted to have an out-of-hospital birth, and I just decided that it would be okay to take a quick look just to make sure that everything was anatomically correct so that I knew, or supposedly knew, that giving birth out of a hospital would be a safe option. While they were doing that quick scan in the office where I worked, right? I was actually a midwife by this point. I was working in an office where I knew the ultrasound tech. I knew all of them. They found what's called placenta previa. That means that my placenta was very close to the cervix, and the cervix is what opens up during labor. Well, once you have placenta previa, they want to check you constantly, every 4 weeks, to see if your placenta has moved. And by the way, it usually does. Actually, it's not so much that it moves, it's that your uterus continues to grow and it just moves with the growth of the placenta, with the uterus, and it's just no big deal. But see here, at 20 weeks, long before I'm anywhere close to actually going into labor, because of this placenta previa diagnosis, now I had to worry about whether I would have to have my baby in the hospital because my placenta didn't move. Now, by this point, I was kind of wising up to the game And I did not consent to have an ultrasound every 4 weeks because I did not want that ultrasound exposure. I said that I would have a follow-up ultrasound at 36 weeks. I wasn't going to do it every four. I would do it when I got to term because it didn't matter at 24 weeks or 28 weeks whether I had placenta previa. None of that mattered because I wasn't in labor yet. What mattered was where it was at term. And so if I go, let's say I get the first scan at 20 weeks, I go back at 24 weeks and it hasn't moved enough. Well, then I have to do it again at 28 weeks and again at 32 weeks. And so instead of that, I said, you know what? We're just going to wait till the end. We'll see what happens. And that's what I did. Of course, it had moved. I had my out-of-hospital birth. No problem. Except for it was a lot of problems, right? Now, why does the system tell you you need to go every 4 weeks when it doesn't matter what they find until the very end? Well, my theory is billing, because each one of those ultrasounds we can bill for, right? More money. Even though what they find might mean nothing. It might just mean that you got to do it again. And meanwhile, your baby is getting exposed to more and more ultrasound, which has not been proven safe at any point in time. And yet it's treated like it's safe. Another problem that can come, especially from third trimester ultrasounds, is this term macrosomia. That's a fancy word for basically saying your baby is big. Except for what they don't tell you is how inaccurate third trimester ultrasounds are. They can be off as much as a pound or two. A pound or two. Think about that. How much that is in baby weight world. Okay? Because if you have a 7-pound baby, everybody's like, oh, that's so sweet. If you have a 9-pound baby, people are like, oh my goodness, how did you do it? That's just a 2-pound difference. It's really not that much difference. It's mostly adipose tissue, which is squishy. It moves. And yet, we have this massive fear based on those measurements from that ultrasound that could be wrong. If that ultrasound predicts that you're going to have a 9-pound baby, everybody looks at you different, treats you different, looks at you like you're an accident waiting to happen, even though your baby might actually only be 7 pounds. They also look at things like the amniotic fluid index, which can say that you have low fluid. And yet you might have ample fluid. It's just that where they looked, you couldn't see it. I don't know how many patients or clients, they're not really patients, they're not sick. That word implies they're sick, but that's what we call it in that world. I don't know how many moms, how about that? That's better. I took care of who had a diagnosis of oligohydramnios, which means a low amount of fluid, who got my shoes wet when their water finally broke because they had so much fluid. It's a flawed test. A study in the British Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology said, quote, "The poor accuracy of ultrasound suggests that relying on ultrasound findings can lead to an increase in interventions unnecessarily when macrosomia is incorrectly ruled in by ultrasound scanning. Over-reliance on them to guide practice should be avoided." Should be avoided. Got a link, or not a link, but I've got a reference to that down in the show notes if you want to look up that study. To wrap up this episode today, I want to read to you something from a book called Optimal Care in Childbirth, The Case for a Physiologic Approach. This is by Hintze Goer and Amy Romano. I've got a link to this down in the show notes. I'm going to read you a couple of paragraphs from this. It's going to be like a little story time. "Still in a low-risk woman, a negative test virtually rules out fetal problems. Surely that reassurance is worth something." Not really. "Because merely knowing the woman is healthy effectively provides the same degree of reassurance." Mohide and Inkin in 1992 explain it this way. "Let us assume a test with 70% sensitivity," which if you'll remember back, I described that with the syphilis testing. It means the test correctly identifies affected individuals. So let's assume a test with 70% sensitivity for fetal death and 98% specificity, which is the test correctly identifies unaffected individuals. Both rates falling in the range reported for antenatal fetal heart rate tests. In a woman with a probability of antenatal demise of 0.5%, that means losing her baby during pregnancy, so a probability of 0.5%, her likelihood of having a live birth is 99.5%. A negative test increases that reassurance by a mere, that reassurance level by a mere 0.4%. Meanwhile, 85% of positive tests will be false positives, which inevitably means unnecessary inductions and cesarean surgeries. In summary, what we have are imprecise measurements of variable characteristics affected by factors bearing no relationship to fetal condition and where poor outcome may not be preventable, in addition to which the association between the test and plausible surrogate measures in the pathway to clinical outcomes is weak, and the treatment can cause the very problems it is intended to prevent. Fetal surveillance testing might have some value in high-risk women for whom positive predictive values would be higher. But this is by no means certain. In unselected populations or in healthy women, it has none. Now, I know that that was a lot. Some of it sounded very medicalized. You can go back and listen to this to make it all make sense if you need to. But the bottom line is, having a negative routine test, using the example that they gave, only increases your level of reassurance by 0.4%. That means nothing. It means nothing, but it sets you up for potential false positives that can ruin your birth plan. So what's the moral of the story? Don't just go along with a test without knowing the information that you need to make a good informed choice. You need to know what the test is. You need to know what it's looking for, how good of a test it is. That's that sensitivity and specificity. Those are big words, but you just need to know how good it is at predicting who actually has it and how good it is at ruling out people that don't have it. Because what good is it if it doesn't rule you out if you don't have it? Like in my situation with the syphilis test, it's no good. Also, you need to know what happens if that test comes back positive. Then what? You need to know these kind of things. How common are the false positives in this test? Maybe even real positives that don't mean much that can limit your choice. How common are those things? How often do people get these false positives that ruin their birth plan? How will your birth attendant look at your care if you have a positive result on some test that you don't want to pursue further? So let's say you get a positive and you're like, eh, okay, I'll just deal with it. And you don't want to do anything further. How's your birth attendant going to deal with that? Bottom line, is the test going to change anything about your birth plan? Because if it's not going to change anything about your birth plan, what's the point in doing it? That's kind of my underlying question for all testing. What's it going to change? If it's not going to change anything, then why are you doing it? These are decisions you've got to think through and make. You've got to be in prayer. You've got to be talking to your Father in heaven, because as we know, this system that we're in is so far from Him, and it's designed almost like it's a God in and of itself, that it wants you to turn to it for your guidance and for your wisdom. But that is not where our wisdom comes from. Pregnancy is a natural process. It is a normal, natural thing. It is a process designed by God. Everything within it, all the changes in your body, all the things that go on in your body to support that pregnancy are designed by God perfectly. And when we start looking for every little thing to try to make sure this and that and the other is not wrong, we set ourselves up for having to then submit to a medical system because it becomes our only option. When really we should be submitting to our Father in heaven, who is the manager of our pregnancy. He's the one that created the pregnancy. He's the one that's going to bring the baby in its perfect time. And we need to rely on Him and not this medical system. And it is a hard road to walk. I am very sorry that we are in this situation. I'm sorry that you have to make these decisions, but just know that you don't have to make them alone. I'm here to support you. Be sure to check down in the show notes for all the ways that I do support you, and I'm here for you. There are several links to books down there. The one that I just read from, which if you're looking at the video, I've got that book down there, a link to it, The Optimal Guide the Optimal Care in Childbirth, Case for the Physiological Approach. I've got Born in the USA, which is the book that I quoted from Marsden Wagner. And I will also put this one, I didn't really talk specifically about this, but I did allude to the fact that we don't know if ultrasounds are safe. They have never been proven safe, and there are actually studies that do exist, real actual human studies, that prove that they're not. Yes, I said that out loud. That book is called, and by the way, this book is dry. It is not a easy reader, but it is full of actual studies that will give you actual information so you can make actual decisions that are based on truth. This book is called 50 Human Studies in Utero Conducted in Modern China Indicate Extreme Risk for Prenatal Ultrasound, a New Bibliography by Jim West. It looks like this if you're looking at a video. I just want you to understand that this book right here is quality. It is dry, but it is quality, and I highly recommend it. So I'll put the link for that down in the show notes as well. I will be right back here next week to give you more information, more stuff to help you have your birth God's way. I know it's heavy. I know it's a lot, but don't lose hope. Weed through it all. Know that your Father in heaven is in control. Forget the confusion. Forget the stress. Lean on Him. He has promised to carry you through. No one else has, and no one else will. He will. He made your baby. He has made your body to support the life of that baby. And He has not forgotten about you, and He's not going to forget about you now. Y'all have a great rest of your day. Real quick, if today's episode blessed you in any way, would you head over to Apple Podcasts and leave me a quick 5-star written review? It'll take you less than a minute, but it's the best thank you you can give me. And it will help my show to reach more mamas just like you so we can all find God's best for our families. I'll see you right back here in a few days.